Welcome to the Next Brave Thing podcast. My name is Ella Hooper, and I believe that breakthrough is on the other side of bravery. This podcast features brave stories, emotional health, and creativity to inspire you to take your next brave step. Well, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Next Brave Thing podcast. I'm joined by another beautiful Australian-American traveler, my beautiful friend, Lara Pilcher. Lara, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Ella.
Yeah, it's so exciting to have you. Yes. So you are joining us from Georgia, Atlanta.
Yep.
Yeah. And so I visited you there. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah, we did.
Yes, we did. Lots of laughs.
Yeah.
I think when you live in America for a long time and then when you get around Australians, you have to pull out the Kath and Kim.
You and your good friend are gold at it. I don't think you could even compare.
Yeah, and for everyone else listening that doesn't know what that means, go look them up. They're ridiculous.
Kath and Kim, they'll be all over YouTube, won't they?
Yeah. But no, I'm excited to have you because we worked together for a year at Bethel Conservatory of the Arts, but you're originally from Perth, I just discovered. I thought you were from Melbourne, but then
my hubby was born there. Yeah.
Yes. So you grew up in Perth and then you lived in Sydney. You also have lived in Melbourne. You've lived in London.
Yes.
You've had this beautiful, full, creative life and you're married. You have two kids. You have a background in music theatre and dance. Mm. You've done so much training. I'm looking at all the incredible places that you've trained at RADA in London, at WAPA. I remember when I was auditioning for drama schools, it was like WAPA and NIDA and BCA back in the day.
Yes.
So you have this extensive background. And then when I met you, you and your husband, Andrew, were on a TV show. It was like 2020 COVID and you were on a TV show, Parental Guidance in Australia. So I was like experiencing you being on TV in Australia, but being in America, it was a very surreal experience.
Yeah, for me too.
Yeah.
Especially because I was overseas when that went to air. So I never actually watched it with the rest of the country. But
yeah. It's so wild. But anyway, I'm having Lara on because she's such a beautiful human, but she's also this creative coach. And you guys need to follow her on Instagram, especially if you're a creative or someone who just wants to awaken your creativity in your life, because everything that you post is so full of inspiration and empowerment. And I really felt like today's episode was going to be around, finding your empowerment in creativity. So, so Lara is a podcast host. She's a speaker, writer, educator. She was an amazing acting instructor at Bethel Conservatory of the Arts, as well as many other places, and also a certified life coach. But I'd love for you, Lara, just to kick us off, give us a little bit of background of like what got you started in the arts and, what's the origin story of Lara Pilcher?
Yeah, I think like most of us, we're born creative, and I see that in my own kids. And we're born to want to paint. And I think what we forget as humans is that for those of us who pursue art as a career, that everybody is born with creative expression, and how we find that outlet is interesting. And some of us lose that ability as we get older to really, you know, hone into that creative expression. But for those of us who choose art, it can become our career, and that's what happened for me. And I think it was just a love of creativity. My mom actually really encouraged me. She had not the opportunities I had. She wanted to be a dancer. She would come to ballet class with me. She was the only adult in the class, but she didn't have those, you know, she's a boomer. They had less opportunity overall than next generations after that. And I think that encouragement and that painting and that baking and that letting me be this creative wild soul came from mum. So that's where it started for me growing up and in Western Australia.
Mm. Yeah. And you and I have this thing in common, like the hunger for more, like an adventure. Oh, yeah. And so what sort of when did you move overseas? Because did you go to London first or what sort of led you to moving overseas?
Yeah, it's funny because I didn't know that I was ambitious as an Australian at all. Somebody else told me, hey, you're really ambitious. And I was like, I am. Like, I wouldn't have known at all. And I think I just had such a passion for creativity that for me, what it really, all my moves have really been about, particularly moving overseas, was alignment. It wasn't, it was adventure, but it was like, I want to align with where I can be the most fruitful in my life. And where is that alignment right now? So when I was in grade 12, I went to an arts camp and somebody came to that camp and was saying, hey, there's this course in Sydney. That was my first time leaving home at 17, which was another story. It was hard. During that course, which was a Bachelor of Creative Arts majoring in dance, I got to go to Israel to perform. I got to leave Australia for the first time. I met so many people in America during that trip. And I think I never really stopped. I just met people. And the more I said yes, the more opportunity came. And I said yes, and it kind of keeps going. My first time leaving Australia, like good for good, I was married 3 years and I said to my husband, I've always just wanted, I had this season of running a dance studio in my 20s in Western Australia. It was great. But I said, I've always just wanted to go to London and just audition and just go, let's just have a go and see how I do, because where I was didn't have those sort of opportunity. So again, it was alignment. And my husband has a British passport. He's a British citizen. So he was like, let's just do it, which surprised me because he comes across like the more condensed, less wild soul. But he's the one that's always said yes to my crazy ideas. And that actually gave me the courage. I wish I could say that I'd have the courage on my own, but as confident as I looked, it was him. It was him saying, I'll do this with you. And we went to London and that's where I feel like I spread my wings. I got to know who I am. I feel like that was empowering because it was the first time I was like able to be a small fish in a big pond. Yeah. And that wasn't good for my ego at first. Because in Perth, my ego was doing just fine because, you know, it was like a big fish in a small pond, and I got to London and there was so much entitlement and so much to learn. I learned the hard way, a lot of lessons.
And this is such a good point because I see a lot of people get stuck there and give up. And what was something that, because I mean, I know that, like when I first went to drama school, like when you're in high school, you think you're just the best ever.
I think I'm going to get all the doors open. Yeah.
Yeah. And you really do think everything I touch will turn to gold. Mm-hmm. And then when it doesn't, so tell me a little bit about what kind of inspired you to keep going when you discovered like, oh, I'm a small fish now.
Yeah. I definitely had what I call in my own life the dark night of the soul in London. The first time in this momentous, like all my 20s, momentum, opportunity, travel, creating all the time, nothing, no real closed doors. And if there was a closed door, I would make sure I opened it somehow. But London was the first time doors were just slamming in my face, left, right, and center. And I think I realized, wow, I'm now with the best of the best, and I need to be more. I need to be better. I need to train harder. And I already had a degree at that point. But my passion at that point was musical theatre, and I needed to improve my voice and I needed to improve my acting. So I just signed up. I'm like, sign me up. How can I get better? What's the path? Mm. I'm the person that, you know, when I see something, I have audacious hope, which is like brave, ridiculously brave hope. And it's not delusional. Like that's, I don't believe I need to be that. But what it is that I have the belief that I have what it takes to get to that place if I put myself in the right training. Or I have the ability now because I know I've trained and I'm good enough. So it's one of those two paths. And I think London, I just went, all right, well, if I need to do this, then I'll do it. So I start auditioning for master's programs. I start going, what do I need to do to be seen? to show up fully as an artist. And then I had a lot of knockbacks, but I got into my master's in musical theatre at Arts Educational School, which is a really great school. And I think I did that because I could see that in London, the language of casting was, if you come out of one of the big four top schools, which is transient, those things move. Those are the ones getting signed to agents. Those are the ones getting seen. Those are the ones on West End. It was very rare in the London arts market that you would audition in that without being through one of those schools. It was very hard to get seen. So I was like, well, I'll go to one of those schools. So I just got this, like, while my brother calls me like the little Aussie, I don't know if it's hustler, there's another word, battler, little Aussie battler.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll just show up in another place and go, right, what do I need to do? Like, you know, head down, bum up. And yeah, I wasn't good enough when I arrived. I was a good enough dancer, yes, but I wasn't good enough at the other singing and acting.
Yeah.
Or understanding how it worked over there. So yeah, I think I just like, find a way, knock down a door and just get myself what I need to grow and, you know, say, okay, I'm ready now. And that's what the 7 years in London was, just constant training and upskilling and expanding what I could do as an artist.
And what a great place to do that and training.
Oh, my gosh.
Because it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And what would be like a mountaintop, or like what would have been like a highlight in your London experience? Like what was a highlight for you?
It's funny because when I left, it's because I had two kids 14 months apart and I was just drowning.
Yeah, that's a lot.
I know. I wish I could say that, like, I left and I grieved it, like the loss of a person. It was so hard when I left, and at that point I went back to Melbourne. But those 7 years, I think the highlight really, and I was back for like a holiday, and I stayed in my old neighborhood in a hotel near my old apartment. And I was walking around and I was like, oh, I don't miss London. I miss who I became in London.
Wow.
And what I realized is that I expanded me. Like, I spread my wings. I took the limits off. And because of the nature of the city, I had access to do that. If I wanted to go and do a class any time of day in any form of dance, I could. So I had access to training with incredible people. And I think the highlight was who I was able to become and what I was able to explore, even not become, just explore and play and say yes to. I had crazy opportunities because my husband also had the same expansion. So he was treating one of the prima dancers at Royal Ballet, and she said, come watch me perform. So I'm sitting in the Royal Opera House in the wings in special seats because of her, watching the Royal Ballet side of stage. And I would sit there and go, pinch me, like, what has happened to my life? And we also realized one of the big things was not just the opportunity. When you expand and you become hospitable to others wherever you live, we became hospitable to artists and would lead artists and love on artists and form community. And I think hospitality and having people in my home, that was a highlight. So it's not what you would think. It's not the accolades. It's not, oh, I got to be at this amazing school or work with this person. It's who I could become in a place where there was opportunities to explore who I was.
Yeah, that's so beautifully said. And I think, yeah, you're talking about, like, you're such an expansive season. That sounds incredible. And I think that's the point, is because the mountaintop moments or performing in front of a great audience or whatever, or in the show that you've always dreamed of or whatever, like, those moments are so fleeting. But it's
so fleeting.
It's all the day-to-day life that you're constantly living. And if you're living that enjoyable life, that's so rich.
Yeah.
I would love to know, like, because you mentioned becoming a mum and the grief of kind of losing who you were. And I know so many mums who go through that, especially, just like that, like, like, there's so much change. The need and the focus is on kids. So tell me how you navigated that season, because I know a lot of people listening are probably going through similar seasons of like, I'm kind of losing myself and how do I find myself again? So can you speak to that?
Yeah, it's such an interesting journey going into parenting because unlike a lot of artists, I didn't ever stop and I haven't ever stopped creating or being an artist. Like I was so crazy driven that my first kids, both born in London, I would go to, which is crazy. No one's going to cast you when you bring a baby to an audition, but I did.
You got to do what you got to do.
Like, I was just so driven that I was like, well, I can't find a sitter. I had one child at the time and I took him and I put him there and I'm like, I'm sorry, I couldn't find. I'm like, they're not going to employ you, Lara. But I wanted to still show up and audition for things. Some of the best auditions came when I had kids and I didn't do a good job in them as a result. So like there's just the pure reality, you know, there is that I did grieve the change of being able to just go out and do a class any time of day. I think that was the biggest adjustment. Then you financially can't go out and work initially. Mm-hmm. So that's an adjustment too. So I think a lot of leaving London was like, we can't cope financially on one income in this expensive city. So we relocated to Melbourne. And I still, like I signed with an agent in Melbourne. I still went like crazy, but I had two kids and I remember standing outside of our first house in Melbourne and it was so quiet compared to, you know, inner city London. And I'm like, I can't hear sirens. I can't. It's so quiet. And that for me, I felt like all of that expansion and all of that opportunity and all of that as a mum was gone and I grieved like crazy. And what I didn't realize is that for some of us, many of us actually in the arts or whatever you're doing in life, that we do need to grieve, like the loss of seasons, or maybe that our life doesn't look as an artist the way we wanted or hasn't gone the way we wanted. We have to grieve because it is a loss and we need to authentically let that have a place of grief and then celebrate the art and who we are and what we're able to do in the season that we have. And I am a very thankful person. I try to find the positive in everything, but I did have seasons of dark depression because I couldn't access who I was. And I was I felt entitled as well because I had 7 years. I did all this stuff. I went to Arts Ed, came back to Melbourne and kind of thought a little bit the doors would open. But no, Australia's different. It's a different market. And it's very much like prove yourself. You still have to start at the beginning. You're not known here. You didn't do any of that here. And I mean, that will happen anywhere you go for artists. So it felt a lot like I was sort of back to square one. I did a lot of teaching during that time. And I loved that. But it felt a little bit like I can't access the opportunities. And a casting director was like, why'd you come back? Like, this is a village compared to London, like a small village. And I was like, because of my kids. And I realized I chose this because I wanted them to have wide open space, freedom, grass, fresh air. I chose it for them. And I think there's times where there's a fork in the road as artists and we need to choose, you know, who do I need to show up as? And for me, that was my kids in this season. I kept going as an artist, but my kids, what they needed became a higher priority.
Yeah, which is like learning the dance. And I guess like what did trust look like? Because I think that's the scary thing is like when you're letting go of a past season and you're grieving, I think sometimes the fear is that this is just my lot in life or this will be forever. So what did you talk about having audacious hope, like being in that season of depression and, kind of losing yourself. Like tell me a little bit about like what trust looked like for you or trusting that the season would shift. Like if you could go back to that in-between kind of season.
Yeah, it's interesting because my husband grieved too. We missed who we had become. We missed the leadership that we carried. And it felt and as we reflect back on that season, we both say the same thing. We felt incredible loss. No one really gives space to that. It's like we grieve a person, but grieving a season, grieving like a past thing, like it's real. So I think that the way that I was able to get through it is I never stopped using the opportunities in front of me in that season. I've changed a lot. I've settled down a lot in a good way, not like settled down, I don't try anymore or I'm not ambitious. But so much of what was driving me as to, I think, what led to that depression was a motivation of proving worthiness. Yes. And when that light bulb went off, that I'm actually, the dreams I have been chasing to this point are me trying to show up saying I'm worthy. And I could it could never be satisfied, because if you have that driver underneath your ambition, whatever you achieved, it didn't matter. I didn't feel like I got, you know, that worthiness. Yeah. And I think that at some point when that driver stopped being like, it was actually when I met you in that season, during that season, is when I feel like something broke in me.
Yeah.
And it was no longer my driving force.
Mm.
That's when I was like, you've already done enough. You already are enough.
Yeah.
And from this point forward, you're going to just enjoy being an artist and enjoy your creativity. And I, the other day, just a quick story, I follow someone online. She's very inspiring, older than me by probably 10 years, showing up, chasing Broadway dreams. Mm. And she was like, maybe New York's just not ready for me. Maybe they don't want to. And I was like, it's been 1 year, darling. Like, you cannot give up. Like, you've got to keep going or evolve or shift. And then what was interesting is that she was like, well, I'm going to live a creative life instead of just chasing this one dream. But that is the key, actually.
Yeah.
Is live a creative life. And if that room, like the room that you were chasing, is not working out for you, pivot, because the creative force in you can pivot into another room and you can find joy in that room. And so if I haven't been able to dance, I'll pivot. You know, musical theatre wasn't as big in Melbourne, not as many opportunities, so I pivot into film and TV acting. Or in the season where I wasn't allowed to work in America because of my visa, I pivoted into writing. So I just keep pivoting the creative room that I'm in. But the source within me is the same source. It's the creative expression of that little girl that I was that showed up and made the neighborhood pay 50 cents to come watch me on the backyard stage. It's the same creative joy no matter what I'm doing.
Yes, I love that, because, and I know, and we've been through similar journeys with visas and that sort of thing, because you do feel really trapped and stuck. And, but also I'll get to like talking, because a lot of creatives can feel really stuck and limited and all those feelings. We'll get into that. But I love what you said, which I'm sure was really subconscious, is the thing that was driving you was proving worth. And, like how now that, cause sometimes we can identify, yes, I'm living out this kind of lie or limiting belief, but, and you've kind of touched on it, but what would be the opposite of that now? Like, instead of like, I have to prove my worth, like, what would be the statement now that you feel like you cultivate?
I have to be myself.
Yeah.
That's not easy. Because as you've seen in the last, particularly 6 months, I'm like, time to stop hiding.
Yes.
Time to stop hiding, Lara. And it's perfectionism that can hold you back, and that's really huge. Like, show up with your curves. Show up with the extra kilograms. Show up at the age you are, in your 40s now. Show up when your hair's messy. Show up when your makeup's not perfect. Show up online. Put yourself out there as an artist now, even if you're just doing something like, you know, Batman's, Grand Batman's, as you see me do sometimes, or my ballet bar at my kitchen at, bench at home. Show up in that imperfection, because I feel like so much of what was holding me back was perfect. If I'm not perfect, if I don't show up perfect, and that comes from the industry, that kind of thing that we do, they want us to be ourselves. They say be yourselves. They show up as yourself, but yet there is this sense, like, you know, in the audition, be perfect, look perfect, act perfect. And so that just went through to my entire psychology. Like, I have to be perfect. I have to show up. Everything I put online has to be castable. I have to look ready. I have to be, you know, and what that did is just completely sap the creative life force out of my soul. And I didn't want to be creative anymore, because who would want to be creative with that limitation? So talk about a limited, you know, mindset. And you know this as well with coaching, like, we look for where you hear them, you know, with a limited mindset or something that's sort of not quite it's keeping them stuck.
Yes.
And I think this one's huge for artists, is what we think is excellent so often is perfection. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I signed myself right up for that. So now I'm just like, Laura, this is the big thing. This is what's funny, Ella, is that I was like, well, how was it working for you being perfect? Was that getting you cast? Nope.
Right.
So you might as well show up imperfect, because it wasn't working for you before. You know what I mean? And I was just like, light bulb, how was that work? Wasn't working, so.
Yeah, that's so well said. I love that. I know, because isn't it true, like, especially with artists, we're drawn to their art because of who they are, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, but when we're in so much perfection, like, we can't ever birth anything real or authentic. And I love that you hit that. It's so good. And to give our audience a bit of a timeline, so it's like you came back to Melbourne with the kids and to give your kids that kind of lifestyle. And then it was around COVID time. This is like when we met around that time.
Yeah.
So the next call to adventure, moving in Melbourne was in the craziest lockdown.
So crazy.
And then you moved to America. So tell me, and now you live in Georgia, Atlanta, but you're moving to Northern California.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about that period, and then we'll talk a little bit about getting unstuck.
That period was interesting because I thought I was there to basically live the rest of my life until I retire. Like, I was like looking at houses in the Yarra Valley. Like, I want to retire here and bring my parents over from Western Australia. And I didn't see anything different. But something interesting happened, really interesting. I don't know if you know this, but my brother was marrying an American. He's Australian, of course, but he was marrying an American.
Yeah.
And I came over to America to be at that wedding. And we left our children with their grandparents, two sets. And during that trip in America, it was just interesting because people weren't podcasting as much back then, but I was starting a podcast and I had started to travel around with my husband and interview people that we'd met over the many years of doing what we do. Many of the people I've partnered with over the years just happened to be Americans that I've met in Europe or whatever. And something wild happened. Like, I remember one person introducing us and saying, oh, this is Andrew and Laura and they're amazing. They've done so much. You have to meet them. And it's like what had died in me over those years of parenting survival mode, 14 months apart, like they call it Irish twins. I'd been in 5 years in Melbourne. It's like who I was started to be called out again in America. At all these different places. And my husband and
America
I.
America does that too.
They do that, yes.
They do that.
You more than anyone, you would get this. And it was funny because we were so missing who we were, but we didn't quite have words for it.
Yeah.
And as we traveled around, I was like, this is us again. This is who I miss. This is the person that I miss, the person that's the leader, the person that's showing up in the world like this. And I just felt so alive in America. Something weird like that happened. And then I came back to Melbourne, didn't think much of it, had another dark season during that COVID. Everybody did.
Everyone did. Oh, my gosh.
Because of what happened in Melbourne. The 5 kilometer radius, you couldn't leave. Like, I remember helicopters checking we were all indoors. It was a hard season and it's not really fun talking about it. But I was lying on my bed when the email came in for the job offer at the conservatory, or at the interview offer. And I was like, no, I want to be in Atlanta. I'd been listening to a podcast about Atlanta and I wanted to be in Atlanta. And this offer comes in for California. And again, you think I'm the brave one. My husband, I was like, oh, I'm going to email back, say we're not interested in California. We're trying to get to Atlanta or hoping we might one day. What was so bizarre was that my husband's like, no, explore it. I think you should explore it. I think we should explore it. And I'm like, who is this man that just somehow.
Andrew's like the best human, guys.
He's the best human.
He's so kind and brave. And you guys are such a team. Like, yeah. It's the most beautiful thing. We could do a whole podcast on your relationship.
We have a beautiful relationship, but I look like the wild one that's like leading him around the world. But he's the one that says, let's explore that or let's try that. And I couldn't, I honestly don't think I have the wiring to do it without him. Yeah. As crazy as it looks. So we said yes. And with our two kids, no one on the flight because we had to sign a statutory declaration to leave Australia. No one was traveling in or out of Australia during this time. We packed up our entire life in a matter of weeks and moved to California. Not even really like sure that, and I told them, I was like, I'm trying to get to Atlanta, but in the meantime, I don't know how I'm going to get there, but this door's open. I will serve here until we can get over there. And I've still got that email, I have a copy of it. And I was like, I did say that. I told them I want to go to Atlanta.
Wow.
So they said yes to me and I said, and we just came over and it was just wild. I didn't see myself leaving Australia again. So that was crazy. But I signed up because I was like, I miss who I was and it's alignment and a door opens and my hairdresser goes, Laura, you'd be foolish not to say yes to that. Doors don't just open like that for people.
Right.
Lots of people would love that. And I'm like, doors have opened like that for me because I've always kept saying yes and following this adventurous path. And a lot of doors have not said opened, by the way, but
But I think that's such, your hairdresser's giving you great perspective because I really do believe this. It's the willingness to kind of keep saying yes, and stretching and aligning. I love that word.
Yeah.
And then you do attract these out of the blue offers, you know, like you're talking about. And I love that the other thing is like it wasn't a shiny object like or shiny offer that was put before you. It was more the offer of you feeling more like yourself, which is so cool to kind of see that as like a decision-making kind of guide of like,
does alignment's this like, huge.
Yeah. That's so cool. And because then it gives you like, because I know that season and similar for me, like that was a challenging season, moving countries and like what sort of like, moments of like speaking into, because I know you meet with coach clients who, and a big thing is what we do as coaches is get people unstuck.
Yeah.
And so what have you learned in your own places of stuckness and what's got you out of being stuck?
Yeah, it's so funny, stuckness, isn't it? Because like you said, you're probably not aware it's your subconscious. That's the key. I was that person, and I will say now that I'm not, because I think training and coaching has actually shown me, because as a training and I had to sit in, a lot of people coached me. That was part of the process of learning, was me coaching, me observing, me also being coached. Yes. And I'm like, oh my gosh, the stuff in my head that I didn't even know was in there. And I think, I mean, I tend to sit a little bit on the arrogant side of the spectrum. I did anyway before. I tend to sit like I've got it together. I've worked hard on myself. I tend to be proud by nature. And that's why I'm saying, I'm being honest.
Great.
I'm not the person who sees the things half full. I'm like, no, I got this. I'm gonna, I'll give it. And if someone says, try this, Lara, I'm like, I don't know how to do that. But yes, I'll do it. But I did not see the amount of rubbish keeping me stuck in my own head. And that's it. There's stories we tell ourselves that we don't know we're telling ourselves, no matter what level, no matter what experience, no matter what we've gone through, and only the science of coaching or something like that can actually delve into your brain and unlock it. Yeah. And when you find out what it is, it's not just like, oh, the action is a small thing that we help a client with. It's actually the process of hearing the story in your own head and going, that's keeping me stuck. the other night, my husband said something. I'm like, poor thing, he's now married to a coach. yeah. And I was like, ooh, that's very limited thinking. mm-hmm. My poor daughter's bedtime story, which she loves actually every night, is Progress Pickles Growth Mindset Class. And we do like this funny thing with little ducks, and that's I'm teaching cute. Her about how not to have a fixed mindset about things in life, and that we can always get better, we can always improve. Like I said, it's that audacious hope of I'm not there yet, but I can get there.
Yes.
That's the motto of getting unstuck and recognizing there are things in your head that you don't know are in there that are keeping you stuck.
Yeah, yeah, that's so good and so empowering that it's literally changing the narrative that you're listening to. Yeah. That's so good. I love that so much. So I think that you've kind of touched on it a little bit around learning how to show up imperfectly, especially on social media. And a lot of creatives live in this tension of simultaneously not wanting to be seen but wanting to be seen. So tell me a little bit about your journey, or even with coaching clients that you have, the journey of even feeling safe to be seen, because obviously like you feel safe enough inside yourself, you've settled some identity questions to be able to show up fully on social media as yourself. Like, tell me a little bit about your thoughts around being seen.
Yeah, there's three major things that have come up for me that you probably see a lot. But one is visibility creates opportunity.
Yes.
And hiding myself because I wanted to be only showing perfect wasn't relatable, and it wasn't working for me anyway on social media. So I was like, well, people say be authentic, but that's hard because people think they're being authentic. But being authentic is risky and freaking scary.
So it's so hard to be authentic.
What you don't see is me behind the scenes going, oh, I'm going to tell people I'm in my 40s. Like, there's this thing in the arts where we have to, you know, there's that lie that we believe that youth is.
Like, edit yourself.
Edit yourself. Look perfect. Yeah. You see so many beautiful filters on people's faces.
Yeah.
It's very off-putting for me now. I want the messy, brave person. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, there's back rolls. Now, as a dancer, I've trained myself in the mirror over many, many years that there should be no rolls on my body. This is the narrative I believe for so long, that like, showing up now dancing in my 40s and my I'm nowhere near what I used to be, and I've got back rolls. And I'm like, I'm going to show up right now, because I never did show up on social media, whether it was just wasn't done at the time or I didn't show up when I was at my peak in that way online. And I was like, I'm either going to miss out entirely on getting to show up as a dancer, or I'm going to show up imperfectly now, the age I am now, the weight I am now, and the season I am now. And doing that, I realize, is so relatable. But it was scary. And I actually felt really vulnerable when I started. But visibility is not a one-time thing. It's a practice. Mm-hmm. And you keep showing up. And yes, when you have an opinion about anything, people will come and counter you, or they'll criticize you. And that's just the nature of putting yourself out there. And it's people's choice. They don't have to. But I definitely have to deal with the criticism that comes with it sometimes. Yeah. Not a lot. But, you know, I get once every couple of months someone says something really mean because I might have had an opinion about something that through their filter doesn't gel with them. And then I'm like, I see your point of view, but that's not the audience I'm speaking to. Yeah. And I have to just get tough and keep showing up. So if someone looks at my social media now, I'm like, well, it's not a curated perfect feed of perfect dance. And the dance part of me on there is me saying, I'm taking this back for me. Perfectionism, worthiness, all of that stuff that kept me hidden for so long. I'm like, this is now for me. I've got acting, I've got writing, but my dance, I'm taking that back for my own joy and my own love, not for a job or a hope of a job. And that's been so nice to have my own creative thing. Very healing for me. Yeah.
And it's so inspiring to so many people, especially with dance. I mean, I think that there is so many people just give up once they hit 30 or whatever because it's like this There's such a strong culture of what's success in dance. So it's so inspiring to see just you moving and doing that because you love it. And so many people aren't doing things that they love because of stuck belief. It's like, do the thing you love. It's not about being famous. It's about cultivating joy, you know.
And like you probably saw the other day, I was like, oh my gosh, people are posting their freaking coffee cups and them sitting on a couch having a sip of coffee, and we're artists. We have so much talent and we're not sharing it online.
Yeah.
Because it's not perfect and it takes time and it takes effort. I'm like, this doesn't take time for me to show you a ballet bar. Like, that's easy.
But it's so impressive. I'm not a dancer, but I'm like, that's so impressive that Lara knows how to do that.
I'm surprised. Today I filmed a reel which hasn't come out yet, and I was like, whoa, I'm not 18 anymore. And I was like, I'm actually going to show the bit where I'm like, oh my gosh, I got stuck in a position
that
I haven't tried for a while. And I was like, that's just gold. That's gold. Point of view, Lara trying to be 18. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
And I was like, there it is. I nearly injured my groin.
Yeah. Laugh at yourself, you know?
Yes.
It's so good. I love that. And you're so right, especially for artists, is visibility. Mm. And I think, you know, I notice this was big in Australian culture. I haven't experienced it as much in American culture. Like, there's more like, just put yourself out there. Like, people don't really care.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's, and I don't want to say that it's an Australian culture thing, but like.
But it is.
Yes, it is.
I can say it. It's your podcast. You'll get in trouble.
And we're both Australians, so we've both battled it. But it's the tall poppy syndrome.
Yeah, like, it's real. Yeah.
You know, like, sometimes I think the lie can be that you're being attention seeking if you put yourself out there.
Yeah.
And I remember having that judgment towards people, like, oh, they just think they just put themselves, like, I would just have this judgment towards
people in Australia say that.
Yeah. Yes. But I was that. So I'm like, but then when I felt this call of like, you have to put yourself out there, like, I had to work through my own stuck judgments about people who show up online, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like an interesting.
And the more we're imperfect and showing up, the less judgment there is. Like, when you just are like, well, this is how I am now.
Yeah.
People are not as judgy of that, but the perfection, the curated perfection, it's not attractive even to me now. I don't want to anymore.
Mm. Yeah. And you can feel when someone, like, I enjoy watching people with wrinkles on their face, no makeup, but seeing the light in their eyes, I think that's so beautiful. Because you're like, that's who they are. Like, you know, and sometimes we can create a performance out of that, of like, I need to be natural and glowy and, you know, have the light in my eyes. But sometimes you're like, I'm just surviving here.
Some of the most popular accounts are the most authentic ones.
Yes, so true, because people crave it and want to learn it. But I love this so much. So tell me, this podcast is called The Next Brave Thing, which is all about taking action ultimately. Like, and you are a woman of action.
Mm-hmm.
So what is, like, you feels like you've overcome even just like, I mean, you and I could do a podcast on all the drama of moving overseas.
Oh, my gosh, like, so much drama. It would just be healing for us, I think.
Yeah, I think it would be like the grief, the uncertainty, the, oh, my gosh, the life admin that goes into all of
the
that.
Money.
The money.
Just pour down the drain.
Yes, we could talk about that for a long time, but you've overcome so much and you've taken so many bold, brave steps in your life and even showing up online and going after, you know, being trained in coaching and having your own business and, you know, all of those things. Like, what does courage look like for Lara now that you've overcome so many different trials and done so many things? What does courage look like now?
Yeah.
What's your next brave thing?
Yeah. I wrote a book. It was really during the season where I was constricted in, I couldn't work because of my visa. Yeah. And guess what? That book that I wrote, I threw it away. It was terrible. And I rewrote it after lots of rejections. This is the thing. The brave thing for me is that I'm like, I'll have a go. This little Aussie butler, I'll have a go. And I'll learn as I go. And I think the next brave thing is that after 2 years of rewrites, rejection, applications, trying, like everything I've done in my life, I finally got it to a place where I'm like, this is what I want to say. And none of it was my story anymore. Mm. It started very much as probably writing a little bit too memoir. That all got, I ditched it all. And now I was like, Lara, what does it take to show up in the world as an artist? And that's what the book is. And that, that when I finally got to the core of that, what was in me, and I got all the junk out the way, I got a publishing deal, a proper contract with a London-based publisher, traditional deal, not a hybrid, not a self-published. The next brave thing is that coming out in year. It's a year because it's in editorial now, and there's the book designers working on it, and there's a publicist, and there's this massive team. And I last night was going to bed, I'm like, look at me, a little massive team for this like little Aussie. And I still think that way. The little Aussie battlers like got a massive team working on her book. How did that happen? Through a lot of failure, through a lot of screwing up, through a lot of rejection, through a lot of I'm not giving up and I'm not going to quit. I'm going to keep trying. I'm going to get better because I have audacious hope and I will get there if I keep trying and learning and growing. So the brave thing is that's going to come out. It's my first book. I'm so excited about it. But also, like, it was really hard to get there. So I think that's my encouragement. It's not like bravery is hard.
Yeah.
It's hard and there's a lot of work and a lot of rejection. So,
yeah. But that's such a payoff in the pivot. Like, and, you know, I think that we have favor where we have authority. So it's like, even just that topic is like, you totally cultivate that creative life.
Yes.
And it's so beautiful and so exciting to see, like, even just the payoff of, okay, in this season, because I think a lot of my life has been like my limiting belief is around being stuck or trapped and I can't do this and I'm not capable. But I love that you show us that you can actually do it and you can look for different options or expressions of art. Yeah. And that's so inspiring. Yeah. Wow. I love that. Well, I feel like you've just like been this mama bear that's come on and poured hope into the hearts of these, you know, creatives listening. Is there any final, because you work with creatives day in, day out, you are that, is there any final sort of charge or anything you want to leave my audience with?
Yeah, I think the biggest message on my heart for creatives, artists, whoever, is that your dream is so often motivated by something in your psychology that's not whole. And your dream will pivot and change as you get whole. And so that means you might need to grieve a dream the way it, not that you're going after it, because I'm still going after the same thing, but how it turned out, what the path was like, that part of the dream sometimes, you know, is what we need to grieve in order to say yes to it living a full creative life. Because what happens when you like beeline just for one thing, which is what I was doing for so long, I didn't grab all the beautiful creative stuff around that that I could do right now because I was so fixated on this one like bulleted kind of red flag sort of goal of making it in life.
Yeah.
And I didn't see that I'd already made it. And I already had so much to bring. I'm still going after that goal, but it looks different now. And I'm enjoying my journey there way more. And that's the charge, I think, is live a creative life, whatever that looks like for you. On the way to that goal, you've got to cultivate something full and beautiful around the goal while continuing for the goal and let it evolve and grieve. Grieve is something we just don't talk enough about, but grieve. That it might not have looked in your life, whatever your age, whatever you look like right now, it might not have been what you wanted, but it doesn't mean it's over.
Yeah. So, beautiful. Yeah. So well said. Well, I personally feel inspired just listening to you. Yeah. And it's always so fun to catch up. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, Elle.
My listeners can hear more of you on your podcast, Healthy, Wealthy, Wise. Did I say it right?
That's it, artist.
That's it. It's such a great, because you also talk about lack and, you know, that sort of poverty mindset. And I love all of that. But you can follow Lara on Instagram. And I'm going to put all Lara's details, even if you're interested in coaching with her. I'm going to put all those links in the bio, in the description, so that you guys can follow her and go on the journey with her. So,
thank you.
Thanks again for coming on today.
Thank you, Ella.
Thanks for listening today. Please download, share with your friends, and write a review. If you would like to book in a life coaching session with me, go to my website at www.ella-hooper.com or follow me on Instagram at Next Brave Thing Podcast.